Welcome to The Brand Advantage. This series, brought to you by Bluetex, explores how brand creates real competitive leverage by increasing enterprise visibility, strengthening credibility, and ultimately raising enterprise value. Each episode distills proven strategic thinking from the Bluetex perspective into focused, practical insight, designed to be consumed, not pitched. Strong brands create advantage long before the deal. Now let's jump into another episode of The Brand Advantage.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today, we are going to talk about something that surrounds us completely every single day, but that most people think is incredibly boring until it goes wrong. We're talking about the machinery of government communications.
And I can see people reaching for the skip button already. I mean, the government communication sounds like the very definition of dry.
Right. You think of press releases that nobody reads or, you know, a C-SPAN feed of an empty room. But that's just the surface level. Today, we're talking about the invisible infrastructure that decides how a $1 billion policy actually gets explained to the people who pay for it.
Exactly.
We're talking about how the Pentagon convinces Silicon Valley to work with them, or how a local city council stops a panic during a water crisis. It is high stakes, it is heavily regulated, and frankly, it is where good policy often goes to die if the messaging fails.
That is the reality. You can have the best policy in the world, cleaner water, better defense systems, a revolutionary new healthcare grant. But if you can't communicate it, if you can't get it to the people who need to implement it or the citizens who need to support it, the policy effectively doesn't exist. It's just paper in a drawer.
To help us figure out how this machine works and how the gears turn, we are breaking down a really comprehensive guide released just this month, January 2026, by the agency Bluetex. It's titled Selecting the Right Government PR Firm to Amplify Your Agency's Voice.
And this guide is essentially a field manual. Okay. It isn't written for the general public. It's written for agency directors and communication leads who are, you know, standing on the edge of a cliff realizing they need help, but are absolutely terrified of hiring the wrong partner.
Because hiring the wrong partner in government isn't just a waste of money.
No, not at all. In the private sector, if you hire a bad PR firm, maybe you sell fewer sneakers. You lose some market share. In the public sector, a bad campaign can violate federal law, trigger a congressional hearing, or cause a public safety crisis. The stakes are totally different.
So our mission today is to decode what this guide calls the art and science of government PR. We're going to look at how agencies, from massive federal departments down to your local water board, find partners who can navigate that minefield. We'll cover the vetting process, the specific science of compliance, which is way more complex than I thought, and something that really caught my eye, how you actually measure the ROI of trust.
Trust is the currency. But let's start with that phrase you mentioned, art and science. It sounds like a cliche, you know, something you'd see on a motivational poster.
It does. It sounds like something a consultant says to justify their hourly rate.
Usually, yes. But in this specific context, government contracting, it actually has a very rigid definition. The science isn't just a metaphor. It refers to the regulatory cage these agencies live in.
I just assumed science meant looking at the data or, you know, checking the spelling.
It's much more restricted than that. The science here refers to things like Section 508 compliance.
Section 508.
Yeah, it's a federal law mandating that all electronic and information technology, anything developed, procured, maintained, or used by the federal government, be accessible to people with disabilities.
Huh.
So every PDS, every video, every website has to meet these strict technical standards. If a PR firm builds you a flashy website that isn't 508 compliant, they haven't just done a bad job, they've broken the law.
Okay, that is definitely science.
Then you have the Plain Writing Act of 2010, which requires federal agencies to use clear communication that the public can actually understand. And then the big one, strict prohibitions against propaganda.
Right, because the government isn't allowed to market to us in the traditional sense. They can inform, but they can't levy their own citizens with taxpayer money.
Correct. It's a razor-thin line. A commercial firm might say, this new fighter jet is the coolest thing ever, you should love it. A government agency has to say, this platform provides necessary tactical superiority while adhering to fiscal year budget constraints. If you cross that line into pure promotion without a factual basis, you are in serious legal trouble.
Okay, so that's the science, and it sounds incredibly rigid. So where does the art come in? Because that second sentence you just said, the one about tactical superiority, was incredibly boring. If that's the only way they can talk, no wonder nobody listens.
That is exactly the challenge. The art is taking that dry, legally compliant, committee-approved sentence and making it resonate with a human being. The guide emphasizes that you have to serve a really diverse audience. You might need to explain that same jet program to a four-star general, a software contractor in Silicon Valley, and a nervous parent living near the airbase.
Three totally different languages.
Three different worlds. And you have to speak to all of them simultaneously without contradicting yourself or breaking the law. That is why the guide argues that before you even browse a PR firm's website, you have to perform step one, know thyself.
This is the goal setting section. And looking at the list provided in the text, it seems like most agencies skip this. They just say, we need PR, without defining what PR even means for them.
It is the most common failure point. The guide lists four distinct buckets of goals, and they require totally different skill sets. First, you have raising public awareness. That's broad. That's, you know, please don't start forest fires, or here is how you file your taxes.
Okay, standard public service announcement stuff. That feels like the baseline.
But then look at the second one. Advocating for policy initiatives. That is a different beast entirely. That is targeting legislative aides, industry lobbyists, and think tanks. If you hire a firm that's great at making fun Instagram graphics to do high-level policy advocacy, you are going to fail. You need white papers, you need briefings, you need serious intellectual capital.
Then there's strengthening stakeholder relationships.
That usually means B2G business to government. That's an agency trying to get private companies to bid on contracts or adopt new standards. You are selling a business opportunity, not a public service.
And the last one, which feels like the one that keeps people up at night, preparing for crisis.
If your primary goal is crisis management, let's say you are an agency prone to scandals, data breaches, or natural disasters, you do not need a creative storytelling firm. You need a firm of ex-lawyers and crisis veterans who know how to shut down a rumor mill in 10 minutes flat.
So the takeaway here is if you don't know your destination, don't buy the ticket.
Basically, you have to know if you are talking to the Senate, the supply chain, or the suburbs.
Okay, let's play devil's advocate for a second. I'm an agency director. I have a big budget. I want to make a splash. Why can't I just hire the biggest, flashiest PR firm in New York? The guys who launch the newest smartphones or handle the Super Bowl ads. They know how to get attention. They know how to make people feel things.
They do. But do they know what a continuing resolution is? Do they understand the federal acquisition regulations?
Yeah, probably not.
The guide has a whole section on evaluating experience and expertise. And it essentially warns against what we could call the generalist trap. A consumer PR firm operates on speed and emotion. They want to break the internet. In government, breaking the internet is usually a bad thing. It usually means you messed up.
So you need someone who understands the brakes, not just the gas pedal.
You need what the guide calls legislative awareness. This is critical. Let's say you launch a campaign to promote a new green energy grant. A consumer firm might make it sound like free money for everyone. Great engagement, right? Millions of clicks.
Sure, viral hits. Everyone loves free money.
But if that messaging contradicts the specific appropriation language written by the Appropriations Committee, if you promise something the law didn't actually fund, you have just embarrassed the agency leadership in front of Congress. You might get your funding cut next cycle. A specialist firm checks the legislative language first.
That is a huge distinction. It's not just about what sounds good. It's about what is legally accurate to the penny. The guide also breaks this down by industry vertical. It lists aerospace and defense, healthcare, technology, energy. Is there really that much difference between PR for energy and PR for defense?
It is night and day. In aerospace and defense A&D, you are dealing with a culture of secrecy, of mission readiness, and security clearances. Your audience is internal military stakeholders and external defense contractors.
Yeah.
It is a closed loop. You speak in acronyms. You talk about strength.
And healthcare.
Healthcare is public-facing and highly emotional. You are dealing with HIPAA regulations, patient privacy, and public health anxiety. If you use defense language, which is often aggressive and dominant in a healthcare setting, you sound dystopian. If you use healthcare language, empathetic and soft in a defense setting, you sound weak.
So you need a firm that is essentially bilingual or trilingual.
You need a firm that is native to your specific sector. The guide explicitly mentions niche fields like government contractors and cybersecurity. If a firm doesn't understand the difference between a zero-trust architecture and a firewall, they can't write the press release. It's that simple. You can't fake expertise in these fields because the audience knows more than you do.
Let's talk about the workflow. Once you pick this specialist firm, this unicorn that knows the laws and the lingo, what does the day-to-day look like? The text outlines a process. Research, messaging, media outreach, measurement. It feels a bit, well, standard.
The labels are standard, but the execution described is very specific to the current landscape. Look at the section on strategy and approach. It talks heavily about audience personas.
Which sounds like marketing jargon. Meet Susan. She likes coffee.
It is, but applied to government, it's fascinating. Instead of suburban mom, your persona might be small business owner frustrated by red tape. The firm has to map out that person's journey. Where do they get their news? Do they trust the government? And crucially, how do we reach them without annoying them?
And that leads to this concept of digital orchestration. I liked this term. It sounds like we're conducting a symphony.
It implies that you can't just rely on one instrument. You can't just issue a press release and hope the New York Times picks it up. The guide lists a massive menu of services: social media, video, content marketing, and yes, even 3D design.
The 3D design part stopped me. Why does the Department of Transportation need 3D design? It sounds like they're making a video game.
Think about infrastructure. If you were building a new bridge or a high-speed rail line, a 50-page PDF isn't going to convince the community that the construction noise is worth it. But a 3D flyover video that shows exactly how it eases traffic or what the new park underneath will look like, that wins hearts and minds. Digital orchestration means taking that technical 3D asset and deploying it across social media, ensuring it is mobile-friendly, and backing it up with a clear, plain language FAQ.
So it's ensuring the message lands, regardless of the medium.
Right. It's not digital first or print first. It's audience first.
This all sounds great and, frankly, expensive. Which brings us to the part of the guide that I think is the hardest sell. ROI. Return on investment.
The measuring the immeasurable problem.
Exactly. If I'm Nike, I measure how many shoes I sold. Easy. If I'm the State Department and I want to improve diplomatic relations or increase trust, how on earth do I put a number on that? It feels like you could just make up whatever number you want.
The guide argues that you stop trying to measure feelings and start measuring actions and echoes.
Echoes.
Look at the KPI list in the measuring results section. You have the basics. Media coverage. How many articles? Fine. But then you have policy influence. This is the sophisticated one.
That's the one I wanted to drill into. How do you measure influence?
You track the DNA of your message. Let's say your agency hires a firm to push for a new regulation on AI safety. The firm develops a specific set of talking points and a core narrative.
Yeah.
Maybe they come up with a specific analogy like AI needs seatbelts.
I got you.
You can use software to track if that specific phrase starts appearing in committee hearings. Did a senator use your analogy? Did the language from your white paper end up in the preamble of the final bill?
Wow. So you can literally control F your way to proving ROI.
In a way, yes. If your language becomes the language of the law, that is the ultimate ROI, you have successfully framed the debate.
That is fascinating. There's another metric here, public sentiment. This feels slippery to me.
It used to be. But with modern sentiment analysis tools, and remember, this guide is from 2026, so these tools are pretty advanced. It's data. It's not just counting tweets. It's analyzing the tone. Did the conversation shift from, say, 80% negative to 60% neutral?
Moving people from angry to neutral doesn't sound like a victory parade.
In government, moving people from angry to neutral is a massive win. It means the screaming has stopped and the work can happen. Success isn't always applause. Sometimes it's just the absence of booing.
That's a really good point. And speaking of stopping the screaming, we have to talk about crisis management. The FAQ section of the source explicitly asks, can government PR firms assist with crisis communications?
And the answer is a screaming yes. In fact, the guide frames crisis support as a must-have, not an add-on.
Because when the data breach happens or the scandal breaks, you don't have time to run a procurement process.
You have about 15 minutes before the narrative sets like concrete. This is where the cultural fit section of guide becomes critical. It lists soft skills.
Mm-hmm.
Responsiveness, adaptability, collaboration. These sound fluffy on a resume, but in a crisis, they are operational necessities.
You need to know that the person on the other end of the phone understands your chain of command.
Right. You don't want to move fast and break things, tech PR person handling a delicate diplomatic incident. You need someone who knows the legal constraints, who knows the agency's voice, and who can calm the waters, not churn them up. If the culture doesn't match, the crisis response will fail and heads will roll.
I want to zoom out a bit. We've been talking about the process, the vetting, the measuring, the crisis responding, but looking at the scope of services and the trending topics in the guide, we get a really interesting snapshot of what the information landscape actually looks like right now in 2026.
It is unrecognizable from even 5 years ago.
The term that jumped out at me was AEO. Answer engine optimization. I know SEO, search engine optimization, everyone knows that, but AEO.
This is the frontier. We aren't just Googling things anymore and getting a list of 10 blue links. We are asking AI agents like the one on your phone or your desktop direct questions. How do I apply for a veteran's loan? Is the water in my district safe?
And the AI gives a single answer. It doesn't give you a list of websites to go read.
Right. It summarizes. So AEO is the science of structuring government content so that it becomes the source of truth for those AI models.
That is huge. Because if the AI pulls the answer from a conspiracy theory forum instead of the agency website,
then you have a misinformation crisis instantly. And you might not even know it's happening because it's happening in private conversations between people and their AI. The guide highlights AEO because government agencies must dominate the answer box. If you ask about a new tax law, the AI needs to pull from the IRS, not a Reddit thread. That requires highly technical content structuring schema markup, data tagging, that a generalist PR firm might not even know exists.
It really reinforces that idea of government PR being technical. It's not just schmoozing reporters over drinks. It's coding your message into the digital infrastructure.
And doing it across every level. The guide clarifies that this applies to federal, state, and local. The tools AEO, sentiment analysis, digital orchestration, are scaling down. A local city council might not have a Pentagon budget, but they still need to ensure that when a resident asks their phone, "When is trash pickup?" to get the right answer.
The tactics change, but the mission remains the same.
But the brand voice has to stay consistent. Whether it's a TikTok from a federal agency or a town hall flyer, the underlying authority and trust have to be there.
This has been a lot to process. When you look at the full picture painted by this blue text guide, it's daunting. You have the legal science, the creative art, the specialized sector knowledge, the crisis readiness, and now the technical demands of AI optimization.
It is a rigorous process,
mm-hmm.
But if there is one summary to take away, it is this. Selecting a government PR firm isn't about buying a service. It is about acquiring a capability. You are hiring a strategic partner who can act as a translator between the complex, rigid world of policy and the messy, fast-moving world of people.
And as the title says, to amplify your agency's voice. To make sure that in this incredibly noisy digital world, the things that actually matter, safety, health, infrastructure, don't just get drowned out.
They need to be heard, understood, and acted upon. That is the job.
Before we go, I want to leave you with a thought. We talked about policy influence as a measurable KPI tracking how PO strategies shape actual legislation. It's fascinating, but it also raises a tough question that stuck with me.
It's the big question about the nature of the work.
It is. If agencies are hiring private firms to use advanced data, psychological targeting, and AI optimization to influence policy and sentiment, where exactly does the line sit between public information, telling people what the government is doing, and political persuasion?
It is a line that gets harder and harder to see as the technology gets better.
How does a responsible agency use these powerful tools to inform the public without manipulating the process? The guide says the goal is to amplify the voice, but it's worth asking, at what point does the amplifier start changing the music?
A question for every agency director to keep in mind.
Indeed. Keep asking those questions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next deep dive.